to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 181 and a half. My name is John Morgan. I am still in Moscow, Russia, where UFC Fight Night 136 Hunt versus Oleinik went down last night. I say last night because I'm doing this a little different than normal. It's a Sunday afternoon. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a kind of a rainy, overcast Sunday here in Moscow. Worked till about 6 a.m. last night, but the flights left just super early out of here. So I basically booked an extra day so that I would have time to make sure and get all the work done. So just been kind of killing an afternoon today. I slept in a little bit and kind of got my packing done and got ahead so that I'm in good shape. And then it was time to sit down and do the road show. No real rush because, you know, my man Cole Coffee, he's not here with me. But, of course, he's going to do like he always does. He's going to be the one that puts this all together and gets it uploaded to all the places it needs to go. So he's asleep right now. So I figured, well, no rush in getting everything done. Let's sit down, relax a little bit, and soak in the aftermath of UFC Fight Night 136. It was a fantastic event all the way around. You know, as we said going in, this week was really about the event itself, maybe more so than the fights that were on them. It was about making this debut in the Russian market, and from that perspective, it certainly seemed to be a success for the UFC. 22,603 for a $1.84 million gate is what was announced, and you could feel it. You know, the UFC officials reported 14,000 in their seats before the first fight, and I believe it. You know, I shot a little video of the arena. If you want to see it, I put it on Twitter and Instagram, and that's just what it looked like before the first fight started. And it was busy already. The stadium was pretty interesting. So it was in a huge stadium. It was in the Olympic Stadium. I mean, it's the Olympic Stadium that was built here in Moscow for the 1980 Olympic Games. So just a massive facility that can fit way more than this. But what the facility does and what the UFC elected to do was they'll put up a huge metal wall basically right down the middle. It's kind of an oval, and it would basically be vertically through the oval is kind of how it works. And so that's why if you look on that video that I posted, you know, kind of starts out on your left and you see basically like a flat wall and only a couple rows of seats there. And then as you pan across, you see that the levels of the seating go way up. So it kind of turns into almost an amphitheater type setup because that's where the real stadium seats are sitting. Now, you know, the further around you go, it kind of goes back down again. Now, there's people all the way around, but there was one wall where it was just massive. And I tell you what, it was crazy, too, because the people were not exactly all restrained to their seating areas. The fighter entrances, the fighter exits, anywhere there was an exterior kind of a walkway from the floor, people were just crowded up against it. And it made for a pretty cool environment, I'll say. It was very loud, a lot of energy in the building. I think it made for a little bit of a security nightmare for some of our friends on the security department because people just aren't exactly where they're supposed to be. They're kind of roaming about a little bit. But it certainly made for an intense atmosphere. The fact that there was so much Russian success on the card, you kind of kept building all the way through. And you did. You got to that big crescendo that we talked about. You know, when you go to these local markets and you stack them up with the local names, if they can have some success, it really gets the crowd into it. And when you have that many people in their seat from moment one, it felt good, man. It really did. It was warm inside the building. There's no question about it. Again, built in for the 1980 Olympic Games. So it's an old building. My understanding is it is slated to be revamped and refurbished. And there's another arena that's actually literally right next to the host hotel that we're staying at that's in the construction process right now, which could be a future home for the UFC when it comes to visit Moscow again. I believe, if I remember right, I saw signage, it's the home of FC Dynamo, which is a soccer club here. So there will be other venue options. This venue is historic. It was definitely old. It didn't have amenities. You know, it's a bare bones structure. It's the type of arenas that were built back around that time. It was warm. It was not, you know, Fortaleza levels of hot. It was not, you know, Brazilian summer hot in there. But it was hot. There's no question about it. Very, very warm. But the crowd was into it and loud, rowdy. You know, they'd stomp their feet during moments, and you could feel the vibrations because a lot of the stands that were there were kind of these metal stands that had been erected, and man, you could feel it. So it was a very, very cool environment. I feel very fortunate that I got to experience it. You know, long term, what the market holds, the UFC is excited about it. They believe there's good things ahead for them in the market. You know, there are definitely hurdles. It was a stressful week for UFC officials behind the scenes. I don't think fans really felt it. I think they all came together and put together a fantastic card. But there were headaches and logistical nightmares surrounding this event. There's no question about it. So, you know, that's one of the reasons they did come partner with M1 Global and have some local ties is to help them kind of just navigate through the waters of what's going to continue to be, you know, probably challenging times for them. But, you know, as we said in the show earlier this week, they've set up an office out here. They've hired a vice president to oversee this market. The UFC really sees this as a big market. Probably do, you know, two events a year, which is not a ton, but it's still big. You know, you got two big events a year. And again, you're going to continue to find fighters, man. The Russian fighters, I think they were the so on display here. A lot of them admitted they're having visa problems and things like that, and they'd love to come to the States to train. They'd love to come to the States to fight, but visa issues are kind of an issue. Of course, Mirbek Taismov, one of the chief concerns among them, but a couple of guys mentioned that. But I think the Russian talent is just going to continue to come into the UFC, and I think we saw a lot of it on display. Maybe not the easiest names to say or remember all the time, but you better get to it because they're fantastic. The main event, of course, was Mark Hunt versus Alexei Oleinik. I thought Hunt was going to knock him out. I really did. Going in, I felt that, you know, he's the better striker, no question about it. And it's funny. You watch Alexei Oleinik just walking around the hotel, much less, you know, trying to work out or get on a weigh-in scale or whatever it may be. And he just looks – it looks old, damn it. He looks old and like a man who's been through – 70 MMA fights in his career. He's just old and but damn it, man, is he so good at submissions. If he gets you in those positions, can he take advantage of it? Everybody in the American top team just talks about how strong the guy is, and man, he showed it. You know, I thought Mark Hunt was fighting a decent fight to start out with, no question about it. I thought, you know, chopping the legs was a good idea. Again, here's a guy that's not that mobile to begin with, but what's he going to try to do? He's going to try to take you to the floor. Well, if he can't advance and he can't grab you, he can't get you to the floor. So I thought it was smart. Mark Hunt was chopping away at the leg, landed a big right hand as well. Alexei kind of took a step back, and it looked like he was blinking his eyes a little bit to try to, you know, make sure everything was okay. And then he got the fight to the floor and was able to get to the back and was able to get the rear naked choke. And, you know, the takedowns are going to happen. I guess you could say it's one mistake. I mean, it's one opportunity. I did think that Mark made a mistake by not continuing to battle the hands. I think, you know, and maybe that was part of the strategy of Alexei coming in, just saying, this guy doesn't have a neck. I can't choke him out. You know, maybe it was a little bit of mental warfare there because, you know, at one point, I think Mark was just going for broke and getting up. And not that this is some new technique for him. It's kind of the way he does it. But, man, against Alexei Oleinik, who has shown the ability to choke just about anyone and seemingly to choke them from any angle, I just don't know that you can take those risks. And I think that was a tactical error on Mark Hunt's part. Whether it was calculated or not, I don't know, but it was a mistake. And basically, when he went to bridge and you know, get his hands to the mat and push himself up, Alexei sensed that opening, got the choke in, and that was that. He's not going to give it up after that. So a big win for Alexei Oleinik, who, again, just seems to continue to defy the odds, but is you know, now, you know, had some big wins under his belt and, you know, seems to be moving up the ranks a little bit. This was a big fight for him. There's no doubt about it. And now he's going to be looking for another big fight at this. And man, that career record is so incredible. You know, he's nearing 60 wins. It's just amazing. I will say that Alexei's entire post-fight press conference was in Russian. Now, they did translate it all, but they had to translate the questions and the answers because it was entirely in Russian. There was only a couple English speakers back there covering it, the event, and I was one of them. But I'll be honest, I was so behind at that point. You know, we were on this fight pass pacing, which is great for fans watching on TV. It's not so great for us in the back when we're trying to get all these videos processed and everything posted. Add to that, we had some fantastic guest fighter appearances, which we will certainly be talking about as well. So I was trying to get all those done as well. And the arena Wi-Fi was decent, but not great. But it was way better than the Wi-Fi that I have here at the hotel. So I knew I needed to get as much posted as I could there. Because coming back here was going to take forever, and that's one of the reasons why I was up until 6 a.m. this morning getting everything posted on the internet. So please go to MMA Junkie and check out that content, or you can actually go to the YouTube channel as well. We got it all there because I was working really hard on it. So anyway, even though Alexei Oleinik won and certainly deserves the attention and to celebrate what he accomplished, you would literally just be hearing a woman speaking English, asking and answering her own questions as she translated everything. And that just didn't sound very interesting to me in terms of audio. So what I will do instead is let you hear a little bit of Mark Hunt, who did come in afterwards. I will say, I'm not one for, I'm not one for clapping in the media room. I think the one exception is when guys retire and they come back there and they give their final speech. I mean, a little clap or something as they're saying they're done, or I think is a nice show of respect and appreciation between, you know, people who have worked together. It's like seeing a colleague move along. Yes, we're not peers with fighters, but we definitely work alongside them. So, kind of sending them off with a nice warm reception, I think, is good. But I will say this, the Russian media clapped when Mark Hunt came in, and I don't know, something about it seemed okay to me for some reason. I mean, this is a new market, and Mark is nearing the end of his career, but he is a legend in combat sports, and he was fighting in Russia for the very first time, and despite losing, you know, he put on a good show and did come in and speak to the media afterwards. So I don't know, I thought it was nice. It was kind of comforting for Mark, who I'm sure was a little frustrated at the time. You know, everything that he's gone through, he's admitted this lawsuit stuff is not his cup of tea, man. He even said that earlier this week, and I never really wanted to do the lawsuit against the UFC, but, you know, there's things I need to accomplish, and this is the way I was told to get it done. So, I don't know. There was something about it that was nice, but Mark Hunt, you can hear what he had to say. He kind of lays out his plan for what's next. One fight left. He'd like to do it in Australia. And then after that, UFC career may be over, or perhaps he'll find a way to carry on, but it seems completely up in the air right now.
Марк, добрый вечер. Алексей Рокотов, «Аргументы и факты». Вы два дня назад очень много общались с прессой, а сегодня в ринге были несколько минут. Столько лететь из Австралии и провести в ринге две минуты. Что случилось?
Hi, Mark. It took you really long time to get there. You spent so many times on the plane and so little minutes in the octagon. How do you feel? Was it hard to make such a journey?
No, I felt great. I just got caught in the first round, you know. Congratulations to Alexei, he did a good job.
Алексей Олейник в интервью говорил, что он, скорее всего, не будет пытаться сделать вам удушающий прием, потому что у вас такая короткая шея, что сделать это практически нереально. Вы готовились к тому, что он все равно будет пытаться вас задушить, или вы действительно всерьез восприняли тогда те его слова?
Алексей Олейник mentioned in his interview that he doesn't plan to make an easy kill choke on you. However, were you hoping for that?
Yeah, I trained a lot of stuff for the ground and stuff. Yeah, of course. But, you know, got caught with a sub. Just the way it works with this business, so...
Марк, было заметно, что у вас пластырь на руке. С чем это связано, и не было ли у вас какой-то инфекции?
I've noticed that you have a band-aid on your hand. What is related to? What did happen? Did you cut or did you have any infection?
I think it was an ingrown hair that I was trying to dig out. So, you know, it's you shouldn't dig out ingrown hairs. That's also.
Я пытался выдрать волосы из руки. Может, и не стоило этого делать.
I like to pick stuff from my body, so you know, I just, it's not good.
Люблю это дело, и, возможно, это не самая удачная идея.
Еще вопросы? Было видно во время боя, что Алексея Олейника после лоу-киков Марка отекла нога. Почему он перестал бить, собственно, лоу-кики? Мне кажется, что это могло привести к очень положительному для него результату.
It's been obvious that after some time, Olejnik had troubles with his leg, and he stopped to do his low kicks. However, it could lead him to really good results. It could help. Sorry, my mistake. My bad. So it seems like it helped you a lot that he stopped doing lookout.
Okay, no, it didn't help me because I lost. So,
Mark, you have the last fight in UFC contract. What will be next for you? Fighting with other promotions, finishing career, or continuing UFC?
I don't know. You know, I love working for the UFC, but you know, we have issues. But yeah, I've got one more fight left, and hopefully, I'm trying to get on the Adelaide card. You know, with Ty and the boys. So you know, you know, one last hurrah for the old guy. So, yeah.
It's going to be a good fight, good last fight, huh?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, Mark. Hello.
How you doing?
Did everything went wrong just from the very beginning of the fight, or it started okay and then something has broken?
No, nothing's broken. I'm fine. I just I got caught. You know, Alexei caught me. You know, even though I was hobbling around, he caught me on the ground, and you know, the choke was on. So yeah, it's just the way this business works. It's the best in the world, and you know, he caught me, and he tried to strangle the life out of me. So yeah, that's what happens. It's the business. So.
Марк, вы в Москве первый раз или не первый раз? И успели посмотреть город?
Is that your first time in Moscow, and did you get a chance to walk around the city to take a look?
Yeah, I love your country. Moscow is really nice. It's not what I expected, but yeah, Moscow is a great country. It's nice here. It's really nice. There's a shitload of hot women, and the food's really good too. So nice place. I'm married anyway, so it doesn't matter.
My name is Dennis.
How you doing?
You had some words for Verdum on your social media. Is that something you're planning to build up, like a fight, probably, with him?
Yeah, no, not really. You know, I don't like to try and fight with guys that are cheating. You know, I have a lawsuit already going on. It's been a hard road to try and deal with that, especially being employed. I don't think it's fair, and he, good job he got caught. These guys are stealing from us, you know, from the guys that don't cheat. He's stealing from my kids and stuff, so, you know, good job he got caught. He's a piece of shit anyway, so.
And one more question about tonight's fight. It did look like you had a success fighting on your feet, and everything just went wrong at the point when you got to the ground. Was that the case?
I just got caught, man, you know, just got caught. This is the business, and, you know, congratulations to Alexei. He's a nice guy. He deserves the win. He got me, and, you know, good luck to him as he moves up in the division. Yeah.
So you can confirm that his ground game is some next level stuff?
Oh, it was better than mine, surely, of course. You saw that. He caught me, and that's just the way it works, you know. This is, you know, I could have caught him with anything. But I didn't, so he caught me. So that's just the way this business works.
Здравствуйте, меня зовут Вадим Тихомиров, matchtv.ru. Все, кто проигрывали Федору Емельяненко, хотели взять реванш у Федора Емельяненко. Было бы вам интересно по завершении карьеры подписать контракт с Bellator и провести бой с Федором Емельяненко? Спасибо.
Okay, everybody who had lost to Fedor Emelianenko wanted to, you know, make amends and perform, take the revenge, take it back. So, do you have any plans, or have you ever had a thought of signing with Bellator and fighting him?
Well, look, I you know, I've got a few more fights left in my career. I've been fighting a long time, and I have respect for my fighter, especially Fedor. He's a great fighter. He beat me in Pride. Of course, you want to get that rematch, of course. But, you know, I got one more fight here with UFC, and we'll see what happens. You know, I've been I've been punching on for a long time. You know, for a long, long time. even outside the octagon, sorry.
Здравствуйте. Скажите, пожалуйста, на кого вы поставите в поединке Конор, Хабиб и почему?
Okay, who you stake or at?
I don't know.
McGregor.
I don't know. I have to sit on the fence for that one. It's a hard one. If it's early, maybe Conor. If it goes five rounds, Habib for sure. So, you know, I'm on the fence for that fight.
Thank you.
All right, there you have it. The Super Samoan Mark Hunt coming up short in the main event. Alexei Oleinik picking up a big win. And we'll certainly be looking for a big fight next time out. Another man looking for a big fight next time out. Jan Blachowicz picked up the submission win over Nikita Krylov. Impressive performance here from Blachowicz. Listen, I'll be honest with you. Maybe I had just written off Blachowicz too soon in his career. You know, he had a couple losses, and I thought, man, I say a couple. I mean, he had a 1-4 stretch, you know, and just to me, I thought, you know what, I just don't know if this guy can do it against the very best in the UFC. Yes, he's dangerous, but I don't know that he can get it done against the very best, and now he's doing it because I was high on Nikita Krylov coming into this fight. I hated to see that he went away. Was happy to have him back in the UFC, and, you know, not that Nikita fought bad here, but I think Blachowicz just showed himself as the better fighter. And you know, I thought if anybody was winning by submission, it would probably be Krylov. But no, you know, here he was, Blachowicz, with what I thought was a fantastic performance. And even better than his performance in the cage, he's getting better at handling the mic. He's getting better at saying what he wants. You know, he's seems to be by nature a pretty calm, reserved guy. You know, doesn't, when you interview him, he doesn't have a ton to say. I don't think he likes to just, you know, not that he's shy, but I just think he's kind of a quiet, kind of reserved guy. But, you know, immediately after he picks up the win here, you know, starts making the title belt gesture around the waist, and then gets on the mic and doesn't even let Dan Hardy ask him a question. He says, "Hey, let me say something instead," and he challenges DC, and then says, "If DC can't go, let's go with Gustafson." And I think that's smart, and I think it's fair too. You know, Daniel Cormier is the champ right now, and you know, good for him, man. We talked about that before. What an amazing accomplishment, and gosh, the you know, the win over Stipe was so impressive. But you know, he's basically already said, "Look, I'm fighting Brock Lesnar." He's, you know, don't take away my green panty night, I believe, as he referred to it. But if you're holding two titles and you're saying you basically got one fight left and then you're done, and I know he's teased out, you know, potentially fighting a light heavyweight, but, you know, we haven't heard those plans yet. And, you know, the rumors around John Jones have all centered around John Jones coming back and fighting Alexander Gustafsson, which would be, you know, a rematch that a lot of people would want to see, of course. They had a fantastic fight in Toronto all those years ago. And I haven't heard any rumors of DC in a light heavyweight fight. None, it's been discussed, but none that sounded to me like they were close to being done. Now, I may be wrong, and maybe I just haven't heard it, and maybe, you know, that this press conference next week up in New York, which Colt Coffey will be at, by the way, you know, maybe something gets announced there. But I don't know. I think it's right for Blachowicz to kind of say, hey, do something with that belt, man. Either, you know, if you're not going to defend it, then give it up and let me and Gustafsson fight for it. I don't think that's a horrible idea. There are a couple big fights lined up at light heavyweight right now. You know, in fact, going in, it was actually a little bit ironically, it was Nikita Krylov who was saying, hey, listen, the winner of this fight is in a really nice position because, yes, you know, you've got Volkan Ozdemir versus Anthony Smith coming up. That's definitely a big fight, you know. You've got a couple other ones in there as well that would have a chance. I mean, Ilir Latifi versus Corey Anderson is a big fight. Those guys have both been saying, hey, show me some respect as well. Jimmy Manoa was in action again. Of course, he's fighting Maheto, who's coming up a weight. I mean, there's a couple big fights that can help sort things out. You got Gustafsson out there just kind of waiting. He would seem to be the guy. It sounds like John Jones' return is imminent. It really does. And, of course, we saw the picture of Malky Kawa and John Jones out at the UFC headquarters in Las Vegas to get business done. It seems like the announcement from USADA is imminent. But is it too soon for Madison Square Garden? I don't know. So anyway, Blachowicz certainly factors into all that. I'm not saying that he deserves a title shot right away, but good for him for speaking out. And he certainly deserves a big, big fight. This was an impressive win. Probably not a fight a lot of people were just itching to take. And he gets it done in a pretty impressive fashion via submission. Shabil Abdurakhimov was able to pull off a unanimous decision win over Andrei Arlovski. Not the most exciting fight on the card, no question about it. Abdurakhimov now has a couple wins together. He's a tough guy, and he wants bigger fights. He said, listen, I want to fight some ranked fighters. I deserve it. You know, this was a big win for me. Meanwhile, Andrei Arlovski comes up short for the second time. But I will say, you know, the concerns that we had about Andre, and man, there was a time it just didn't seem like he could take a punch anymore. Those seem to be kind of alleviated, right? I mean, he's not getting the results that he wants. So you can say what you want about the fight with Tai Tuivasa. I know he believes that he won that fight. But at least, you know, I don't feel afraid of sending him out there anymore. And there was a time where I was almost nervous every time somebody threw a punch at Andrei Arlovski. I don't feel that way anymore. Again, not the most exciting fight on the card, but Shamil Abdurakhimov seems to be growing a little bit as a fighter. You know, maybe somebody we need to keep an eye on. He's certainly not an easy out. Somebody you definitely need to keep an eye on is Alexei Kunchenko. Made his UFC debut undefeated. Now, he's not a young guy, so it's not like this is a guy with, you know, 10 years of time ahead of him, but Alexei Kunchenko is definitely a dangerous fighter. Picked up a decision win over Thiago Alves in a fun fight. We knew it was going to be a striking affair, and kudos for Thiago Alves for taking this fight. You know, I mean, this is a fight where I wouldn't say he had little to gain. I mean, at this point in his career, he needs to pick up wins, but you know, who wants to travel to Russia to face the undefeated Russian newcomer? There's not many people probably with their hand in the air for that either. So kudos to Thiago Alves. Thiago, another guy that, you know, has been around forever. And it's hard to see him not getting the results he wants, because mentally he seems to be in a better place than he ever has been, but he's just not picking up the wins right now. So, he's in a tough spot, man. He's in a tough spot. I feel like his reputation has earned him a little bit of a little bit longer leash than most, similar to Andrei Arlovski. I mean, these are two guys that have been around for a long time, that have big followings, that are perfect for cards like this. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens as the UFC moves forward in Russia. And it's the same that we see in every international market. You know, you load the card up with the local guys the first time you come in. Definitely, right? Because you want to give everybody something to cheer about. They root on their own and get behind them in nationalistic pride and all that stuff, right? But then when you keep coming back and you keep putting the same fighters on there, fans get upset. They say, come on, man, I've seen these guys fight. You know, here it would be saying, this is just an M1 Global fight card for me. You know, much the same way Europeans say, oh, this is a Cage Warriors cards. Or, you know, Brazil, they'll say, oh, this is a Chuto Brazil card. You know, they've seen all these fighters. So, you know, bringing an Andrei Arlovski to town, bringing a Thiago Alves to town, a guy that, you know, people have been watching for years on TV, it's not a bad spot to be in. It's not a bad spot to be in. Those guys can keep fighting and making a living. And again, I'm not trying to throw them to the side. I know they're both in believe that they have productive years ahead, but, you know, that's a good spot to be in, is to kind of hit the road and be that UFC star that people get to see. The prelims, Khalid Murtazaliyev and CB Dalloway. Herb Dean is a good referee, but I do believe this was not his best night because of this decision. Now, I went back and watched it again, and I remember thinking, watching it the first time too, that those punches that Murtazaliyev was throwing at the end were really all hitting the arms. I mean, And I can understand from her perspective that you don't want to stop a fight that's just punching the arms. I mean, there's not really any concussive blows being delivered there. I mean, it's some. I mean, even the force is going through the arms a little bit, so it's not like it's nothing. But in some ways, Dolloway was protecting himself. But I got to say, you know, the last 20 seconds or so maybe, I mean, he was just prone on his belly with his hands over his face. I mean, that to me was the body language of somebody who was done. You know, I thought CB was fighting a decent fight. You know, not that it was all going his way, but I thought he was fighting okay. And then with about 90 seconds left in that second round, you know, it looked like he started to slow a little bit. He took a knee that I thought kind of hurt him a little bit. And then, you know, Khalid did what he had to do. CB, I think he was done. I mean, you could see his body language after the round ended. He said right away to his coaches, I'm done. And I think they were trying to get him to rally a little bit. And then Herb Dean came in and said, listen, if you don't get up, I'm going to have to call off this fight. He didn't make any effort to move whatsoever. I mean, nobody wants to, and I've seen people say, and you're right. Hey, CB Dolloway has a right to tap out to strikes. If he wants to, he could have easily tapped out and said, get me out of here. Rightly or wrongly, I think that's almost viewed as cowardly. I think people's characters get questioned when they tap out due to strikes. I think CB was trusting on Herb to get him out of there. I think his body language, you know, not trying to recover any positions with his legs, basically just curling up in a ball and covering up. That to me is the sign of a fighter that's done and that wants to be out of there. And he was relying on Herb to do so. At the same time, I think Herb wants to give him, you know, every opportunity to battle back. And as I said, those last punches were all just hitting the arm. So I think I understand what Herb was looking at, but I think this fight really should have been stopped earlier. You know, you look at the cards in that round, two 10-8s and a 10-7 from Ben Cartledge, who's a judge that I respect his opinion. And, yeah, for him to offer a 10-7, that kind of tells you what kind of round it was. So, rough night. I will say I did, I got done working at 6 a.m. this morning. The breakfast was just getting started here, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to get a little quick bite to eat before I go to sleep. And CB was there right away. He looked fine. He was doing okay. I didn't go talk to him. You know, he was with his camp or whatever. I didn't want to bother him. But he looked to be in good spirits, and he looked to be healthy. So, but yeah, that was not fun to watch. What was fun to watch was Peter Yan versus Jin Soo Sun. What a hell of a fight this was, rightly given as the fight of the night. Although, let's just get into this. Rightly given as the fight of the night, however, Jin Soo Sun missed weight by 1 pound and therefore was not eligible for the bonus. Now, in some situations, the UFC has given the winner another 50 Gs, giving him 100. In other situations, they've taken that 50 and given away another performance bonus. That's what they did here. They gave away another performance bonus instead and ended up doing 3 performance bonuses. And I think that's fine. Listen, they've made it clear in this weight cutting, you got to make weight. So I don't necessarily hold him against it. It's just in all these situations, and it's, oh man, I know maybe it's beating a dead horse, but it's just consistency. And I think that is the stuff that just goes to show why these fighters need to find some way to come together to at least have some voting power or some discussion. I would just like to see consistent rules application from the UFC. That's all. Just consistent rules application. I don't think they're unfair about stuff, but when you just don't know and you're waiting on somebody, well, we'll decide this, we'll decide that, that's a tough spot to be in. You know, we should know. Oh, okay, well, he missed weight. Well, damn, that was the fight of the night. Well, we know right now he just got $100,000. Hell, maybe that would make guys fight more against people that missed weight or fight harder or, you know, if they knew, like, hey, man, you can take this fight against this overweight opponent. It sucks, you know, but you are getting, you know, 20% or, you know, more of his purse. And check this out. If you guys get the fight of the night, you get $100,000. I don't know. Maybe that would be good. I don't know. I just wish it was consistent so that we knew, and it didn't seem like, oh, was somebody playing favorites, or why did this happen this time? And it's like, well, we just decided that, you know. But enough about that. Petr Yan, both these guys, to me, stock rose in my book. You know, Petr was a huge favorite on the card, so I think in some ways, you know, you could easily say, well, I'm disappointed. I expected him to get things done quicker. But no, to show that he can be in a battle like that, man, it was fun, and he fought well. I thought he had a great fight. And Jinsu Sun, who came in on short notice, showed a ton of character as well. I mean, not only toughness, but just entertainment value. It was fun to watch fight, man. He was a showman in there. Man, you could hear the Korean Zombie yelling from the corner. That was a good squad there, man. You know, I think Petr Yan showed what he's all about, but Sun showed that he's somebody we need to keep an eye on in the future as well. So just a fun scrap all the way around. I really enjoyed it. If you didn't get to watch in this card, at least pull that one up and watch that fight, because you will definitely enjoy it. Rustam Khabilov defeated Cajun Johnson. Now, a little bit of controversy here. It's pretty clear, I think, to anybody watching the fight that round one goes to Cajun Johnson. Round two goes to Rustam Khabilov. So then it comes down to round three. I think that's where the fight is decided. And I got to say, I feel like Cajun Johnson won the fight. I really do. And I don't mean that to demean Rustam Khabilov, because I'm a big fan of his. I think he is as dangerous as anybody in the division. Also, speaks incredibly good English, which I seem to always forget and be surprised by when he does. But, you know, so he's a good interview. He's a good fighter. He's great grappling, but Cajun was able to neutralize a lot of that. Cajun striking looked good. And yes, Khabilov got that late takedown in the third round, and I think finishing on top, you know, definitely swayed the judges. And again, Ben Cartlidge, who's an official that I respect a lot. You know, I've had discussions with him about the theory of officiating, about actual officiating techniques and what to look for, and when you're judging a fight and that sort of thing. So I mean, I respect his opinion, and he leaned towards Khabilov. So when I see that, it makes me think, well, maybe I'm not looking at it right. Maybe I watched the wrong thing. But I gotta say, in watching this, I think I had the fight scored for Cajun Johnson. So tough for him, man. And boy, it was, you know, watching the broadcast, because I was in the back for most of the night in the press room where we were doing interviews, and watching the broadcast when he's, you know, the energy that Cajun was trying to put out there is like, I think he was saying, I am victorious, like over and over, and then to not get the nod your way kind of sucks. And of course, you know, the real question is now, what does the UFC do with Cajun Johnson? Behind the scenes, I mean, people can only say so much, especially with all the labor stuff that the Cajun is leading. But behind the scenes, I haven't sensed any real hatred. That, like, oh, my God, we got to get rid of this guy. I cannot wait. You know, we joked on the preview show. The matchmaking that he has received certainly hasn't seen by accident. You know, he's facing stylistically tough people, but he's also in just a very deep division. So it'll be interesting to see what the UFC does to them, because, you know, on the one hand, they could say, man, you're trying to lead these labor things, like, oh, we're done, out, peace. And they're within their right to do it. They can't do it because of that, but because Cajun lost, they can easily say, well, your contract's up and we're done with you. You know, you're not allowed to terminate somebody's employment because they're trying to unionize or whatever. But we'll see. I think they should keep him around. To be honest, I think he keeps getting better and better. I really do. I think he keeps improving as a fighter. And I think that the unionization efforts, the organization efforts that he's leading, don't seem to be with a ton of malice, and they don't seem to be with, you know, just being ornery and being difficult. They seem to be about getting progress and getting everybody on the same page. And so I think, therefore, the UFC should, you know, at least respect that to a degree. I think he deserves an opportunity to stick around. So we'll see what they decide. Mirbek Taisimov picked up a win over Desmond Green. Taisimov, you know, he's on a 6-fight winning streak now. That's impressive. Of course, he missed weight big time. I will say kudos to Desmond Green, not only for, one, taking the fight, but two, getting 40%. You know, good for him, man. And I would say that's a lesson to fighters. You know, that 20% missed weight penalty isn't standard in most places. It's not written into law anywhere or policy anywhere. So you can ask for more, and I think you should. Now, you know, if it's a pound or half pound, you know, take your 20% and do what you got to do. But, you know, somebody comes in 4 or 5 pounds over, yeah, ask for a little bit more. Green, you know, still don't know all the details of everything that happened to him leading into this fight. Of course, he was involved in that automobile accident, which ended up leading to the death of two of the people that were involved in it. But I got to think his preparation was certainly marred by this. Still, he grinded out with Taisimov, who's been dangerous, just knocking people out left and right. This one goes all the way to a decision. But that's okay. I think Taisimov, you know, he said he was sick, and he said he had that had a lot to do with his weight issues. He said he knew he wasn't going to make weight. Didn't have injuries, but it was some kind of illness. The thing that was bothersome afterwards, and I'd heard this before, but it was the first time I had heard him say it, is that if he doesn't get this visa so he can travel elsewhere and, you know, fight in the United States and fight in the biggest fights, you know, on the pay-per-views and get those opportunities, that he's going to be done. He's just going to have to call it a career. He's like, listen, I don't want anything but to be UFC champion. He's like, I have other things going on in life. You know, he's like, I have some social projects I do. I have other businesses. You know, I'm fine. Like, I don't need to do this for money. I do it because I want to become a UFC champion. And that's the only thing I want out of the sport, is to be a UFC champion. And if I don't have that opportunity, which, let's be honest, you're not going to have that opportunity if you're only able to fight in Europe and Russia. I mean, yes, you know, the guys at the highest level may only fight twice a year, so he could fulfill that just fighting twice a year in Russia if he wanted. But that's not how you get the big fights. You know, that's not how you get the big fights. So, troubling. You know, I did ask Dave Shaw afterwards in the post-fight press conference, hey, do you think there's anything you can do to help facilitate these visa situations? And he said, listen, I promise we do the best we can, but some of it's out of our control. And I mean, yeah, the government's the one that ultimately issues the visa, so that, you know, they can only do so much. It would be just a damn shame for Mirbek Taisimov to walk away just because he can't get a visa. Magomed Ankalaev picked up a knockout win over Marcin Pragnio. And how scary is Magomed Ankalaev? Man, you know, had a chance to stand next to him a couple times this week, and he is a big dude and dangerous, powerful, man. You know, that loss to Paul Craig, you know, remember that one? The 1 second left after he was dominating the whole time and he gets submitted. I mean, Paul Craig, that incredible come. I mean, that'll be the highlight of his life, man. That was a phenomenal, phenomenal feat to get beat for that long, but to never give up and to score a submission in the final second was amazing. But Ankalaev showed what he is capable of doing in this fight, the big knockout, you know, rocked him with a punch, threw a big kick as well that was partially blocked but still knocked him down, and then big shots on the ground, and just somebody to definitely keep your eye on. It was interesting backstage. He was asked if he'd be interested in fighting Paul Craig again to kind of rematch that and get rid of that blemish, and I thought it was kind of telling of what he thinks. He was just like, nah, what do I need that for? You know what I mean? Like, I was beating the guy for 14 minutes and 58 seconds, and he beat me for 1 second, and he gets the result. But, you know, I mean, of course, down the line, it might make sense, but I thought that was kind of interesting to him. He's just like, come on, man, I don't need that. Another impressive performance, Jordan Johnson getting the submission win over Adam Yandiv, who was a dangerous-looking fella, no question about it. But Jordan Johnson, you know, first of all, moving down to the middleweight division, he looked very, very impressive. This was a big finish for him, and not only just because it was a big win, kept him perfect. He's 10-0 in his career, 4-0 in the UFC, but it was the last fight of his UFC deal. And he said, look, I rolled the dice, I bet on myself, and I think it should pay off. You know, I think this was an impressive win. Just incredibly relentless with his aggression, with his wrestling, no question about it. Fun stuff there to watch. and fun stuff afterwards, because he basically came and like apologized for, you know, the way he's kind of behaved in the past, where he's won a fight and kind of says, I'm not happy, I'm not this, I'm not that. He's like, yeah, you know what, today I'm going to be happy. I'm going to enjoy this. I need to enjoy the result. You know, he even said, I took a moment. You know, I jumped up on the cage and I didn't really celebrate crazy. He's like, but I just wanted to take a moment and soak it in. If you watch the broadcast, you can see that. He's just kind of calmly sitting up there and observing, looking around. He's like, I wanted to soak it in. So, you know, credit to Yandy for surviving early, man. The choke that was in the first round looked like it was going to end it. He battled through it, but ultimately succumbed to a choke later on in the second round. This was just a great performance from Jordan Johnson. And, you know, look, one of the only foreigners to come into to Russia on this evening and pick up a win. So because of that, and because he was one of the few that could speak without a translator, let's hear from Jordan Johnson, because I think his story is pretty interesting.
Obviously, a very big win in a pretty special environment here and a big event. What's the emotion like for you right now?
I don't know, you know, start happy, you know, I always plan on winning. I'm very happy. You know, I fought out my contracts, maybe my last fight here. I don't plan on it being. I'd like to resign, which is like a little bit more money. I know in some of these interviews I've done, you're a familiar face, so you guys are new, sometimes I'm a little grumpy, but I'm gonna enjoy it. So I'm gonna really enjoy this whole experience.
So conscious decision on your part to come in on the last fight. I mean, was there a deal offered and you said, let's ride it out and see what happens?
Yeah, I know I'm worth a little bit more, and you know, I laid a nice bet on myself and wanted to come out and show. You know, I am a finisher. I got to the UFC and, you know, I had a real dominant first performance, and then, you know, I didn't perform the way I wanted to in my last two outings. You know, I found I was having my first child right before Marcel. And so my mind was elsewhere, and then I really wanted to get a fight booked before my last one, and the timing didn't work out. I made offers to fight all kinds of people, all kinds of weight classes, really just anything, and it got pushed to very close to the birth of my child. So I had some other stuff on my mind. You know, when your wife goes into emergency C-section and you have your first child and you got to leave a couple days later to go fight, sometimes it's hard to get your best performance, but you know, then I was still confident and went out and got W. But, yeah, you know, so I decided to show my worth. I knew I'm back to my old ways, and I got a great team back at Power MMA with absolute monsters, and I got the best coaching staff in the world, and now it's easy. I just show up. And like I said, I knew I'd do great. I made that bet on myself, and I did come out, and I did great. I got a finish, so now I'd like, you know, let's see what happens. You know,
Was there added emotion or nerves? I mean, we think, hey, you're on foreign soil, this big crowd. I mean, that's the pressure. But you were dealing with a whole different set of things than what we were looking at.
Nope, fighting's the same. I've said it in, you know, all my interviews. It's in a King Supers parking lot or in one of the biggest arenas in the world. It's a fight. It's all the same. Doesn't matter where it's at. Doesn't matter who's watching. All the same.
So being that this was your first UFC finish, how high does this rank in comparison to your other wins?
Like I was saying earlier, I've never been happy, and, you know, I get down with these fights and I'm grumpy, and sometimes, you know, sorry about that. So I'm happy right now. It feels good. I'm going to enjoy this whole thing. Climbed up on the octagon. It wasn't a crazy finish. It wasn't out of nowhere, but I just made sure to get up there because I really wanted to enjoy the moment.
John Neal's a pretty intense guy. He's obviously got a lot of power, as I'm sure you've seen and experienced. How did you go about preparing for that power, and how did the fight correspond to your expectations?
Kind of like I mentioned in the cage, so I wasn't supposed to fight until October 6th card. That's going to be my middleweight debut, and I got the opportunity to take this fight. And so, you know, I'm coming down from 205, so this is going to be my first. This was my first fight at middleweight, and so I didn't have time to make a game plan for myself. I handed it over to Jason. Jason, come over here real quick. My strength and conditioning coach, you can slide over here. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, nobody wants to see me.
So I put all my trust in him and my head coach, Shire, and they put the program together, and I did what I was told, and it sucked a lot of times. But they prepared everything. They put the game plan together, everything, you know, strength, conditioning, diet, worked with Lockhart, the training, the dealing with Adam's you know, size and strength and speed and his techniques, and so it's just kind of a blur. I did what I was told. Here we are. So
ideally, what comes next? I mean, I guess you're a free agent at this point, but in a perfect world, a perfect scenario, you know, do you get a UFC deal done quick? Do you fight again soon? What's the perfect scenario for you?
It would be pretty cool. Yeah, I got to talk with whoever I need to talk to and get this figured out. Go from there. I don't know. So I've never been in this position before. If I'm going to do it, with a big smile on my face, I'm going to enjoy it all. So.
Yeah, if you re-sign, is there anyone in particular you're interested in facing? Because, I mean, the middleweight division is hotter than ever.
Who do I want to fight in middleweight? There's a lot of guys. I want to start, you know, I was a top 15 guy, light heavyweight till once coming down. I don't know what this win would do for me in the rankings, or slide me in. But, you know, first things, I start working towards. And I might fight a light heavyweight. I can fight a heavyweight, too. I'm still a little chubby. You might even see me at welterweight. I just don't know. I'm just going to, like I said, I'm gonna figure it out. But wherever I'm at, I want a nice ranked opponent. Someone who's supposed to beat me. And I want to fuck him up. So.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
All right, so there you have it, Jordan Johnson. An interesting character, to say the least, man. I enjoy talking to him, so it's kind of funny. He's pretty self-aware, I guess, that he's been a little bit cranky in his last post-fight. So it's kind of funny to have him lay that out there. But, again, like it, betting on himself and hoping it pays off. You know, undefeated record, 4-0 in the UFC definitely means something. I don't feel like he has that big signature win just yet that's going to make him like a high super high-paid guy. But this got him going in the right direction. You know, this was an opponent that had some reputation and he was able to win. So, big win there for him. Ramzan Amiev picked up another big win, decision win. Former M1 middleweight champ. Now he's fighting at welterweight, 3-0 in the UFC. The only problem, all decisions. You know, hasn't gotten the big finishes yet. But certainly looks to have some talent. And he actually said afterwards, again, he's got to get a visa first. But if he can, he wants to relocate to American Top Team and train out there and take advantage of those facilities and those training partners and all that. So maybe someone that you need to keep an eye on that could make some big adjustments with that. And the fight, of course, started out with Merab Dvalishvili picking up a decision win over Tarian Ware. Tarian, it turns out, got injured. I'm high on Tarian Ware, despite his UFC record, but I think he's got a lot of skills that he brings to the table. I thought he looked incredibly flat here, and it turns out there was a reason for that. I guess he pretty much injured his shoulder on the very first takedown. I guess he posted and popped his shoulder out or something along those lines. So not good. You could see the frustration in his body language, but he battled through it. Meanwhile, Merab Dvalishvili, I'm high on this guy too, man. He is a little bundle of energy, and he's dangerous. And you know, fighting under that Longo Serra team, he's got all the tools that he needs there to continue to improve. And that team supports him, man. You know, the fact that Ray Longo and Matt Serra both flew out to Russia. You know, I mean, you know how much stuff both those guys have going on with their team and things outside of the sport. And for them to both take the time to travel out here, which it's not quick to get out here. I mean, at least they're on the East Coast, so it's a little bit easier. But it's not quick to get out here. For them to take the time goes to show. And then you can just see it backstage, man. I mean, they really have love for Merab. And it's cool to see that. I love seeing, you know, all teams, I think, stick together. But you can always see there's kind of little special bonds, you know. And I think there's a lot of them on that Longo Serra team, man. They are a close-knit bunch. But it was cool to see how happy they were to see Merab come in and dominate this way and pick up the UFC win. And afterward, Merab called out Sean O'Malley. I like it. He's like, you just keep smoking and I'll keep winning. I'll keep fighting. I love that as well. So a big win there from Merab Dvalishvili. Overall, man, it was a fun card, and it was quick. Obviously, you got that fight pass pacing, and you had a lot of success for the Russians. So it was a good night. Now, meanwhile, while all that was going on out front, there was some stuff going on backstage, some of which has become fairly clicked on today, I've noticed. In short, that would be Joanna Jędrzejczyk and a Russian reporter having a bit of an exchange. Now, I want to play the whole scrum for you. I did do a full interview with Joanna earlier this week, and hopefully you checked my interview out, because I thought she was very, very good, talking about a lot of things. You know, about future at 115, 125, you know, various things that are going on. So she came back And she addressed a lot of the same topics, of course, because those are the ones that are relevant. Basically made it clear that, you know, in talking to her in both these interviews and then just kind of some off-record conversations, she's not admitting anything, but reading between the lines, it sounds like her and Shevchenko is basically a done deal at this point. When it's going to happen, I don't know. Now, again, I threw out there, hey, could it happen in Madison Square Garden? And she says, I mean, I'm down if I need to. If I have to, I will. But I'd really like some more time to prepare. You know, I'd like to do a proper camp and all that. So, and that's fair. That makes sense, which, again, makes you think that they do indeed already know what the main event is. I swear I keep hearing that they want John Jones to be there, but we don't get anything from USADA. And I can respect it to some degree. You know, they want to get everything done before they put anything out in the field. But it's always frustrating. I wish we at least knew what was happening along the way. But we don't. Okay, so with that out of the way, back to Ioana. Ioana come back and did an interview with us. We also had Kelvin Gastelum. We had Henry Cejudo as well. We had Zabit Magomedsharipov, which was great. And then Alexander Volkov came back as well. So it was a busy night in the back in addition to all the winners. So check all that out on MMA Junkie as well. But I'm going to play the whole scrum for you because Ioana had some great things to say, and she talked about her career a little bit. But, of course, you got to hear this exchange between her and this poor Russian reporter who it's probably worth checking out the video, too, at some point just because I think the audio is going to be good enough for you to get an understanding of what was going on, but when you see the visuals as well, I think it really adds something.
Papaha, where is my papaha? Oh, Kelvin Gastelum stole my papaha. So let him bring my papaha.
Does it mean that you're going to be
I'm 50-50. I'm big fan of Conor and I'm big fan of Khabib. Khabib, two different styles. As you saw, I never predict the fights. I don't like to predict the fights. People can do that. They can predict my fights, but I never do that. But anything and everything can happen in the fight. So this is definitely the fight of what? Like a century?
Yeah.
In MMA. So I cannot wait to watch two real great warriors fighting each other. So I'm 50-50. Two different styles, like I said, and anything can happen.
Anyone is supporting here tonight?
I want to support my friends from ATT, Arlovski, Olejnik, and Thiago Alves, and two guys from Poland. I'm very close with Jan Blachowicz. We used to compete together in Muay Thai back in the day, so I'm very happy to be here in Moscow. Statistics on my social media shows that I have so many friends in Russia, and I could feel that today. I saw that today at the meet and greet with my friends at the fan village. It's great. It's a great spot to be. I'm looking forward, and I believe that UFC will be back to Russia, to Moscow. Maybe St. Petersburg next. That would be great.
So talking about Russian fighters, obviously talks about you fighting Valentina Shevchenko. You already said that you would want to do this.
Yeah, this fight is not on. So, of course, I've got an offer, but we'll see. I'm very open to fight Valentina Shevchenko. I always want to fight the best fighters, and I think that definitely she is one of the top female fighters in the world. Multiple world Muay Thai champion, very successful in MMA. So we'll see what's going to happen.
What do you feel about the decision about taking her belt away? Do you think it was fair?
I think it was fair, man. I paid the ultimate price for my... I paid the ultimate price, but I was on weight November 2017, and I would do this the same, because for me it's a shame for us as a fighter, athlete and champion to not be on weight. So, man, we need real and dedicated fighters and champions in the UFC. It's simply the best organizations in the world, and here is not a space and time for bullshit like this. So it was very hard decision, very tough decision, and I believe that she's not happy, but man, you must take this job very serious, and you must be 100% in. And weight cuts are not easy, are not nice, but but it's part of our job, so we shouldn't complain and just be on weight when you have to be.
There's a good chance of just going to Raj might fight Rose Namajunas for the title now.
Who it's not mine. This fight is going to happen. Rose, I bet that Jessica Andrade is the next challenger for the title in 115 division. And great performance last week. She's the next one in line.
And who do you think wins that fight?
I don't know, like I said, it's 50-50, anything can happen, but we saw that Andreas is a gifted fighter with the power, so she's very powerful, but people don't know how to fight her. If Rose will do her homework and if she watches my fight with Jessica Andreas, she can be successful in this fight, but Andreas is a very dangerous fighter. You must have a good game plan for the fight with Jessica, against her.
Obviously, you and Karolina Kowalkiewicz have some history together, but she was obviously very sad and noticeably sad afterwards. Do you have any message for her?
Oh, just keep your head up. It's tough business. It's tough business. I've been in this business for 15 years. We win, we learn, and that's it. We keep on going. And you can see the value and the strength of the fighter after they take her losses. Yeah.
We still don't have a main event for Madison Square Garden. Could you be ready, or is that?
Why not? I can be ready soon, but honestly, it's been like 7-8 weeks after my last fight with Tisha Torres. I've been very busy. I hit so many projects, like I told you before. So I wanna prepare good for my next fight. But hey, man, if they call me, I could step even today if someone didn't make weight. But. I want to prepare good for my next fight. We will see when it's going to happen.
Keeping in mind your previous experience with Valentina Shevchenko in Muay Thai, would you be concerned fighting her because you already had three fights?
Concerned? About what?
How many fights did you have with her?
Did you watch my fight with her?
Yeah, I did.
You did? And what do you think? Which one? First one, second or third one? All of them? And what do you think?
She won them.
She won them? Okay, no, that's cool.
That was the decision, right?
Yeah. But the last two fights were very close, so...
Yeah, but...
Man, it was like 10 years ago. We are different fighters. We're not gonna meet in the ring. We're gonna meet in the octagon. So that's the point.
So it's a different game.
Of course, it's a different game. We different people right now. We different athletes right now. We are different fighters. So there is nothing I must be concerned about. Should I? Are you?
I'm not fighting.
Are you concerned or not?
I'm neutral.
Oh, that's nice. That's good to hear.
Is it possible that switching camps affect your performance?
No. I'm very happy with American Top Team. I think it was one of the greatest decisions in my fighting career. So I'm very happy with my coaches, with Mikey Brown, Katel Kubis, and, you know, there are great, great people. Not only great coaches, but great people. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thanks. Few questions.
Yeah.
A few more questions. First of all, about your impression and emotion about Moscow.
I like this city. I was to Moscow 2013. It's a very beautiful city. People are very nice, so I'm very happy to be here.
Very interesting answer. Okay. And about the Russian men? Do you have the husband?
Russian men?
Yeah.
Is my husband Russian?
No. Just your opinion about Russian men. Okay, because we know that the Russian women, that one of the most beautiful women on the planet, and I asked you just about the Russian men, about the Russian athletes. You know about the Russian famous men.
I see them all the time, even here, so they are cool, like every other fighters, I don't know.
Okay, it's more interesting than before. And they have their favorite Russian fighter. Which one do you like more than other?
I like a bunch of them, you know, Marvin Beck just won, I like him so much. We've been training together for a little bit back in the day, because he came down to Olsztyn when I was training back home, but you know, so many great athletes from Russia. I know so many from Muay Thai competition. They are great athletes, very, very tough and very strong characters, and very strong, not only physically, but mentally as well.
Okay, and the last question about the main event of this autumn, about the Khabib against Conor.
Yep.
Just your opinion about it.
I think definitely it's the fight of this century. Anything can happen, you know. Two different styles. I like both of the fighters, and I don't like to predict the fight. So you are not going to hear the prediction from me.
Okay, if you have about the behavior, about the, you know what I mean.
What, do you want to insult Conor McGregor here? You want to insult him?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to insult him? Come here. What's your name?
Dima.
Insult Conor McGregor in the front of the camera. What do you think about him? Come on, be honest.
Yeah, he's a good fighter, but not more. He can speak more than other, but I think that's the...
Okay. Wasn't he a champion in two different weight classes? Is he only talking or he's doing stuff?
No, he's doing not.
So why are you saying that he's talking more than doing somehow?
But he's the part of his success, because...
Of course he is.
Yeah, sure. But we have a lot of...
Are you working for big media or small media? What's your dream?
Middle.
What's your goal in your life?
To be best in my...
To be the best?
Yeah.
Okay.
In my...
You really train hard?
Profession?
You really train hard?
Not sure, because it's enough for me, my position right
it's
now.
It's enough? Oh, that's nice. So all the best to you.
Yeah, sure. But, okay, which one will support in against...
I told you. I support both of them. They both are my colleagues, so no prediction for this fight.
Great.
If you are Russian and you want to insult Conor McGregor here, you shouldn't do that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Last question.
Thank you. So it was example of stupid question, so thank you so much, guys.
All right. So there it is in its entire glory. So here's a couple things that... first of all, let me just tell you from my point of view, when the guy started asking questions, I was going to turn the camera off. But I don't know. I didn't. I just decided to keep rolling because you never know, right? You never know what you're going to get. You got to keep rolling. So I'm so glad that I didn't turn my camera off and walk away, because it ended up being kind of fun to watch. But here's the thing, and I've seen mostly what I've seen is support of Joanna for, like, hey, look, this guy's trying to instigate, and this is what MMA reporters do. And it is true to a point. I mean, listen, we want those sound bites. We want those quotes. I try not to be too much of an instigator about it. I mean, I don't like manufacturing something like that in my role. You know, if an athlete wants to use me as a platform to get his message out, and it happens to be one that fires people up, then by all means, I'm right here for you. But I don't like to poke and prod or whatever and just try to make it happen. And maybe that's to my own detriment. You know, maybe I should do more of that, but I just... that's not my comfort level in who I am. So I've seen a lot of support for Joanna and saying, you know, good for you. You know, this guy was just trying to get you to talk trash and you didn't want to. And that's everywhere. But and I've seen some criticism of her saying, look at, you know, why is she being rude to this guy? You know, English isn't his first language, which, let's not forget, English isn't Joanna's first language either. But here was the thing. I think when you listen to it in full, you get a sense of it more than if you just watch the clip that's making the most rounds, which is about the Conor stuff. And listen, that's the reality of where we live in. You know, online, we want short, quick, fast, you know, instant content. But if you hear it in full, I think you hear, A, she was done. Like, her media obligation was done. She stood in front of us all. She answered questions. And she was done. And then this reporter is like, no, wait, just a couple more questions. And it starts with just, you know, how do you like Moscow? Okay, whatever. And then, what do you think about Russian men? I mean, what? Like, what are you talking about? What kind of question is that? You know what I mean? Like, it seems bizarre, right? Okay. And so I think you could see that she was already on edge at that point. And then you have to remember that. So the final question is that he asks about her thoughts on Conor and Khabib, which is understandable, except that she had literally just answered the question a few minutes earlier. You just weren't standing there. You know what I mean? And you pulled her back to do something that she was already done doing and asked her a question that she already answered. And so that's why I think, you know, I don't think Joanna deserves any of the criticism she's got. It's been small, but I don't think it deserves, you know, deserves the criticism that she's necessarily received from it. I'll be honest, like, I wasn't sure if we should put the clip out, but I don't know. I thought it was pretty entertaining. And listen, I mean, I'm sure I've done some dumb stuff, and I don't mind if I did it. And I think that's the other part that made me willing to put it out. Like, had the reporter not, and this is what you can't hear in audio, but had the reporter not come out in front of the camera, which is what Joanna asked him to do, then I think I probably wouldn't have used it. But hey, man, I mean, if you're jumping in the center stage and you're coming on camera, like, to me at that point, like, you're saying, okay, well, I'm okay being part of this. You know, if you say, nah, I don't want any part of that, you know what I mean, then I don't know if we use it as much. But, you know, you come out there and you want to be part of the show, then I guess you're going to be part of the show. So it was an interesting moment from the night, to say the least. I think it definitely ended up being our top trafficked post online at MMA Junkie. So interesting. But the news part of that, of course, is that it does sound like, to me, everything that I hear, that you know, this fight with Valentin is going to happen. It's just a matter of when it happens. So we'll see. Another guest fighter that was back there was Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo, I will say as well, it also sounds to me like the Dillashaw thing is just about a given at this point. The way he's talking about it, the way he's discussing it, it sounds like it's pretty much I wouldn't say a done deal, but it sounds like that's the direction that everybody believes is the right direction to go right now. I do find it interesting that he says he'll take it at either weight class. I can respect him for that. Because honestly, if anybody gets a chance to be a two-division champion, it should probably be TJ Dillashaw, right? I mean, A, he was the one that was willing to fight Mighty Mouse before, so he was willing to come down before. It's not like he's just cherry-picking somebody now that he's like, oh, well, now that Mighty Mouse is gone, I think I could beat Henry Cejudo. No, that's not it. You know, he wanted to come to 25 all along, and now he's saying he'll still do it. And he, you know, granted, it's not a lot more, but he has accomplished more in his division than Cejudo has done at flyweight. So I think that, you know, for Cejudo to come up without even defending his belt, especially on a fight that's so close, and try for a shot at a two-division champ, I don't know that makes sense. So I think I like the idea better of TJ coming down. Although I do like the concept, and I kind of floated it out there, of, well, hey, look, if I beat TJ at 25, then I get to go try to beat him again at 35 and be a two-division title holder. I kind of like that concept. Of course, a lot of that would depend on what Mighty Mouse's schedule is on coming back. But so there's that, and I want you to hear that. But also, this interesting little nugget that we heard earlier in the week, that Cejudo's belt is gone. Somehow, during his travels to Russia, his luggage was lost, and in that luggage was his UFC belt. Now, interesting regardless, but now you think about, this is the same man whose Olympic gold medal was destroyed in a fire. So now he has neither his Olympic gold medal nor his UFC championship belt. Now, the gold medal ain't coming back. It was destroyed in a fire. The UFC championship belt, they're hoping to recover it. You know, lost bags happen, and sometimes lost bags are found. So we'll see. But I want you to hear from Henry Cejudo as well.
Henry, what give us an idea what life is like, man. Champ life, walking around the last month. What's it been like for you?
Oh, man, I never want to lose again. I like it. It's been good, especially thus far here in Russia. You know, the people respect fighting, wrestling so much. And I was staying at the Hyatt, and it's a 5-star resort. And they even upped it. I think it might be like a 6-star. I'm staying at the lot, and it's just crazy, man. I'm being pampered. I have my own driver. These people, they know they're fighting, and it's amazing, man. The amount of support that I get for both being a wrestler and being a fighter, and I feel appreciated here in Russia.
Have you had a time to really step back and reflect on what you accomplished? I mean, I know you kind of knew that night, but now that you've had a little time to sit back, I mean, A, beating Demetrius Johnson, B, you know, adding that to your Olympic credentials and what that means. I mean, have you had a chance to really consider it?
Yeah. I mean, it cements me in legacy in the history books right away. Like, there's no, people will forever remember Henry Cejudo, you know, and that was the initial statement, by not just by beating Demetrius Johnson. It wasn't just beating the pound for pound great, but it was cementing my legacy for forever in history, in the history books. Put MMA aside, in sports, you know, a two-sport world champion, is you won't see that in a while, and I'm just happy I'm the first one.
Nice. And we're hearing a lot of talk about what's next. I mean, everybody wants to know. A lot of TJ Dillashaw name being thrown out there. Give us the update. Break some news. What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I believe he wants to fight me from what he's, has said it, from what he has said to the media. I want to fight him. The UFC wants to fight. Now it's just time to negotiate and to see what weight class we're going to do it at. Like, I gave them the option either 25 or 35. It doesn't matter for me. I want the super fight. At 25, I'll knock him out. So if he wants to come down, you're going to get knocked out at 125 pounds. 35, I'm taking a little risk. But I still believe I could beat him. You know, 25, he's gonna be depleted, and I'm gonna take advantage of that.
One can make the argument that DJ deserves an immediate rematch on account of what he's accomplished in the UFC. What do you think? I mean, who do you think is most deserving to face you?
Man, but this is absolutely does Demetrius Johnson deserve the rematch? When it comes to what he's done, absolutely. But I know Demetrius is also hurt. He's still recovering from his injuries. If I don't fight TJ, I want DJ next. But the reason why I want to fight TJ was just because it's a super fight. Because I'm saying I'll go up or you come down, but we can fight. It's not about a year of talking, a year and a half of talking that such and such is going to happen. I'm saying let's square down now. I felt like they had overlooked me with Demetrius Johnson in my fight against Demetrius. And they're always trying to get the super fight with TJ and DJ. And I'm just like, you know what? I won. Give me the fight. I feel like it's deserving. Demetrius Johnson can heal up, and I'll fight him next.
If he did come down to 25 and you beat him, would you expect him to let you fight him at 35 then at that point? Because, I mean, the idea of being a champ, right, the two-division champion, that's got to be appealing.
Oh, for sure, absolutely. Like I said, I prefer to go up. I want to go up. That's mine. I think that's even the UFC's plan. But... you know, at the end of the day, I have to respect what TJ has done, and obviously everybody wants to fight him, including me, and he wants to fight me. To me, it really doesn't matter. It just doesn't. I just want to fight this guy. I can beat him at 25 or 35.
When do you want to see it happen? Do you have a timeline yet that makes sense for you?
Yeah, sometime in December. Sometime maybe the end of the year, if possible, or Canada, or January, February. I think sometime towards like those dates.
Rumor has it that your belt was lost in the luggage.
It is, man. Flying first class priority. It was. You know, my luggage is lost at this point, but luckily the UFC took me shopping. They took me on a shopping spree, and I bought all kinds of clothes. But unfortunately, my belt is in my luggage, so now on top of my gold medal, now is my belt. I don't know what it is about gold. I can't keep it. You know, but. But we're going to find it. They're looking for the bags now.
So you got to feel a little bit cursed, right? I mean, come on.
Not really, actually. Kind of, you know, it lets me know that material comes and goes. It's the memories. It's the legacy that comes with being a champion. And I'm going to get a gold medal back. I'm going to get a belt back. But it's the memories that come with that makes it special.
And I want to ask you one thing outside of your career. Khabib Nurmagomedov got a huge fight coming up with Conor McGregor. I wonder, I mean, the wrestling credentials that you have, the knowledge that you have, when you watch him fight, what is it that makes him special? What is it about Khabib that has led him to be so effective?
I don't even think it's something physical. I think it's something internal that drives the physical. I think his determination, his background, where he's from. If you guys go where he's from, these guys are... It's literally survival, and he brings that into the cage. Like, he brings him, his country, and his culture into the cage. I think that's what makes him dangerous. And I think the biggest deal, if he can get bypass Conor McGregor's distance and range, it's gonna be a five-round punishing fight. It's gonna be a grind for Conor.
How would you coach him? What advice, if you were giving Khabib one piece of advice on how to win this fight, what would it be?
I tell him composure. I would stay calm. I would find the right timing, just like Conor would, and to eventually get to his legs, or put him on his back, put him against the cage, and grind him out. But it's a tough fight for him. People are underestimating Conor too. Conor McGregor's he's a master at range, and if you can get past that range, you're good. But if you can't, good night. Buenas noches.
A lot of people feel that the flyweight division has really opened up now that you dethroned Mighty Mouse. Who are some of the up-and-coming flyweights that you got your eye on as potential future challengers?
Oh, man, well, I have fight Demetrius again, do a rematch with Joseph Benavidez is also on my mind. I know that Brazilian, Figueroa, I know he's on there. He's been killing people. I think those are the three guys that I got my eyes on. But the first one in line, if I fight at 25, is to beat Demetrius Johnson, and the rest can go from there. I'm not dodging Demetrius Johnson by any means. I want a super fight. I want to make money, guys. I want to challenge myself, and I want it to be lucrative. I deserve it, man. I'm a two sport world champ, 10 years in the making, and I think that has a lot of juice too. Maybe I haven't defended my belt 11 or 12 times, but God, man, what I've done is nobody has done. Give me some credit a little bit. Yes. Let me take this fight with no problems.
Last question for Henry.
What's your prediction on Habib versus Khabib?
What's my what?
Prediction.
My prediction with Conor McGregor versus Khabib is, I'm rooting. I like them both, man. So it's kind of hard for me to, because the problem is when you're a fighter, you tell somebody who's gonna win. You almost become like not their friends no more. But I can tell you the person that's gonna win that fight is the person that isolates the game plan. Khabib is gonna have to close the range. Conor McGregor is gonna have to find his range and use his hands to knock him out early.
All right, so there you go, a little update from Henry Cejudo as well. Like I said, it sounds like all signs are pointing to that Dillashaw fight, and hopefully all signs point to him getting his actual belt back. Crazy, crazy times. All right, listen, I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to go maybe get some dinner, a couple cocktails, and then I've got to leave here at 3 a.m. to fly home, see my wife and kid for a little bit, and then I am actually on to Boise this week for Bellator up there in Idaho. Our man Cole Coffey is going to be heading out to the Khabib and Conor McGregor press conference, which is going to be wild, right? You guys saw there's no fans in there. It's just media only. So I think it's going to be kind of a weird, weird vibe in there. I'm kind of anxious to see how it plays out. I mean, I love those New York press conferences because the fans, they scream and holler and yell, and I don't know, it makes it fun. It gives it a real wild atmosphere. I mean, there's no reason for the media to clap. There's no reason for the media to make noise. So it's going to be kind of weird with just kind of a quiet background to you know, this buildup. But, yeah, Cole Coffey's going to be making that ride out there. Give him all the love in the world because he's actually flying out there, going to the press conference, and then going to camp out at the airport and take the first flight out in the morning as well. So he's got a 20-hour stretch from Vegas to New York. So listen to the man. You know, he's doing what he does. So give him a little bit of love. I will say, Russia, if you ever get a chance to go. I enjoyed it. I don't know if I would enjoy it during the wintertime, but it was fun. The traffic sucks. There's some amazing history here, some amazing architecture here. Red Square was super powerful, man. I don't know. I loved it. We were going to try to shoot some video there and ended up just me overruling it and saying, nah, man, we're not going to shoot it. Like, this is too cool of a place for us to be jumping up in here talking about mixed martial arts and stuff. It was too cool stuff. So that video will be coming out later this week. We did end up shooting something. It was kind of fun. So hopefully you guys will dig that. The other thing is the Russian attitude is cool, man. It's we were leaving the weigh-ins the other day, and we were coming out of a ballroom, and they were, unbeknownst to me, on the other side of the door, they were having the fighter meetings. And so I guess security said, listen, just do us a favor. Anybody that tries to come out, like, hold them here for a little bit. And once we get done with the fighter meeting, cool, you know, we'll let them all out. Well, I get to the door, I've got all my gear, and I just want to go move so I can go get all the pictures filed, the video filed, and all that. And the security guard literally, like, as I see him standing there, but he's not really blocking the door, he's just kind of in front of the door. So I start to reach around him to grab the door, and he slides over, kind of puts himself in between me and the door, and I kind of step back a little bit. I was like, what is this about? Like, what's this dude blocking me from leaving for? And he just looks at me and says, you should wait. You should wait. I don't want to wait. I don't want. He didn't say, you can't go there. He didn't say, hey, bro, man, just hang on one second. We got one thing going on. Now, I know that part of it's a language barrier, but the other thing I thought was just gangster, man. He didn't say, like, don't, or hey, do you mind? He was like, he kind of like gave me a suggestion. That's a gangster move. When you don't tell somebody what to do, you give them a suggestion what they ought to do, you should wait. That's pretty gangster. I loved it out here, though, man. I had a good time. Hopefully we get to come back. I do appreciate USA Today and MMA Junkie for allowing us to come cover this debut event. You know, we've cut back on travel a little bit this year for budgetary concerns, but to be able to cover the first one, I thought was pretty cool. And hopefully you guys all enjoyed the coverage that we had all week long. And, yeah, we'll do it again next week from Boise. Boise? Got to remind myself. I learned last time. In the meantime, thanks for listening.